Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe. Welcome to the Seminary Explores. I'm Katie Giebenhain with the Seminary Ridge Review. My guest is Bob Randolph, chairperson for the English and Foreign Languages Department and writer-in-residence at Waynesburg University, and pastor of a Presbyterian church in Southwest Pennsylvania. He is the 2015 minister-in-residence at Gettysburg Seminary, spending a week on campus this fall. Randolph has degrees in English, theology, and social work. He is a poet with extensive publication in journals and two books, including the Editor's Prize winner for Elixir Press. Bob, welcome to the Seminary Explores.
Thank you, Katie.
I'm curious, as a preacher and a writer, can you tell us how poetry might be useful to pastors in ways they don't necessarily expect?
I can try. I think that one of the things that poets work with is imagery. And the image sometimes becomes the core of a poem. I think that pastors sometimes, at least I, write from a sort of an argument perspective. I may make a point and then develop that point in my sermon. But I think the use of the image sometimes that I might think ordinarily as sort of along the way might be used maybe at the end of the sermon, which is would be quite unusual. Think about the image, for example, of the cross as an image. I think about the image of the empty tomb as an image. I'm not sure that as a pastor I could say more about the power of Easter than to say there's the empty tomb after having led up to it. So I'm thinking that part of that idea that we don't necessarily have to explain the image if the image is powerful enough. And where one places that image in the sermon, it would be up to the pastor, the pastor's preparations. I think also that another thing that poets pay attention to is a sort of rhythm, a cadence. Some pastors do that. Some pastors punctuate their delivery with vocal sounds. some don't. But I think in preparing the sermon, paying attention to a rhythmical development, mm-hmm. whether it's a rhythm in the words, and here's a strange idea, a rhythm of ideas, that there can be a rhythmical sense that poets would carry that might be useful for a pastor.
In one of your sermons this week, you talked about being consistently amazed. And you had this fish story about the moth and the trout. And I was thinking about how preachers and poets stay amazed, or how...
Yeah, it could be a blessing, it could be a curse, but sometimes I think it's there. The world is really interesting to me, and almost every poet, writer I've ever known. I remember taking a walk with an artist one time, and we were out on a farm, and just walking through the pastures, and she said, "Look at that." And I said, "What?" And she said, "Look at that barn." And I said, "Oh, yeah, it's an old barn that's been around here for a long time. It's one of the oldest." And she said, no, look at what would happen if you took the line of that roof and extended it on down so it intersected with that. And she developed a whole canvas in her mind related to something that wasn't there. And I think that often for, in terms of amazement, that's something about what it feels like. There's a feeling that there is a core identity there that is beyond what I can understand and what I pay attention to anyway. And then there is more even than that. Mm-hmm. So the amazement is sort of multi-layered. And the poem is an attempt to engage that in some way. And often it does come from, as I was just saying, often it does come from an image. The poem builds out of an image. Once I have the image on the page in a way that feels adequate, at least, nuances about that image and layers connected to that image start to manifest in my mind. Best I can do it at the moment. And the poem sort of organically grows out of that. And sometimes that's what it feels like. It feels like an organic growth, as if I'm not adding ingredients. This is something that's growing on its own in a way, and I'm participating in it, making judgments about it, deciding how to prune it. but there it is. It's growing. So the amazement, I think, is there. The question is whether I'm going to be awake enough to pay attention to it. I mean, it's there. The question is whether I can keep myself open to what's already there.
In some ways, it's also an act of trust or an act of faith, right? To that, you know, that curiosity, but also having some sort of, instead of doubting yourself immediately, having enough faith to let that happen.
That's 100% right. Yeah, and the curse side would be you can't help it. You know, I mean, the people who know you say, "Oh, there he is. He's off. He's off writing a poem in his mind," even though, you know, we're not. One of my teachers, who's a novelist, passed away some years ago. His wife said she was afraid to drive with him at night, particularly because he would be talking to his characters on the side of the road. I'm not there. I don't want to be there, but I think that you know, yeah, I think that's right. And there is an element of faith and trust, and then of course to stay in this world properly. There's an element of reining that in and working with, and that would be in poetry. That's the part where you work on the draft, mm-hmm. and come back to it and make it something that can live in this world, mm-hmm. In addition to the world where we got it. Yeah.
I'd like to ask you a general vocational question now. We're at a seminary and we've got students. Looking at all kinds of calls, you know, where they're being trained and where they see themselves going, and there's a lot of changes happening in the church, in society, in theological education, and you have a sort of dual vocation at the moment. I mean, you've also done a lot of other things in your life. I was wondering what sort of maybe advice or perspective, what's something that you could say about how it might look. You know, not everything is a straight, mm-hmm. Sort of a straight career exactly, you know, as you might have thought. And so maybe if you could just share something with us about this, you know, navigating this kind of dual vocation that you have and mm-hmm. how you find it.
It's a really good question, Katie. My expectations, let me trace the path in a way. My expectations when I was young were that I would not attend college, that I would work probably in the factory that my dad was working in before he retired. But fortunately, I was able to go to college with no plan other than being able to go. While I was there, I always loved to read and to write, so that's what I did, still without much of a plan of where it was going to take me, but I had good enough grades that I was able to get a teaching assistantship now for a master's level study in English again. So I went there and got a master and a PhD, from there, I went to work, PhD in English. I got married, and my wife was a year behind me in school, so I needed to stay in the area with a PhD in English. There weren't jobs in the area for a PhD in English. Okay. I went to the post office and got a job in the post office. Worked in the post office for 8 years, ended up as a rural route carrier. My father died at that point, which caused me to turn to reading the Bible with high seriousness with a PhD in English in that way. I decided I would go to the seminary. When I was in seminary, I decided, well, I'm not sure about this. So I went back into teaching. Taught for 20 years, was lucky enough to be twice a Fulbright scholar, and now a professor emeritus from that school. Moved to another school, they hired me as in my current position. But I found out that there were several churches that were so small that they could not pay the salary of an ordained pastor. So I said, I'm a Presbyterian. I went to the presbytery and said, "Well, I'm happy to go and serve that congregation." So that's what I've done. And then I was hired as a professor in the college. And now a church, a pastor in a church, and also got another degree, this time in counseling. So for a while I was a professor in a college, pastor in a church, and counselor at a mission mostly for homeless addicts. Mm-hmm. And oddly enough, you know, it looks like those are quite different paths, but in some way they cohere. That I don't see for myself, I don't feel pulled in several directions. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the idea that at the core of it all, my faith tells me that at the core of it all, God is at work. Whether I'm talking about Walt Whitman, or whether I'm preaching, or whether I'm talking to a group of people who are just trying to hold on to their lives because they're trying to get clean from their addiction. I guess I don't feel as if it's my place to separate those. I don't know if that makes sense. It's my place to serve where I can. Mm-hmm. And if I can serve from this direction over here, this direction over here, and I'm happy to do that. And I think that's what does it. If someone had said to me when I was in high school, what you're going to do when you is you're going to be doing, I think I've done now 15 or 16 funerals in the last 3 years. My congregation is elderly and they pass away. Somebody said, you're going to do a funeral on Sunday, and then Monday you'll be going to talk to a homeless addict who's been in 5 missions and doesn't see much future for himself other than continuing to use. And then later on Monday, you're going to go teach a class about Oedipus the King. I would say, not going to happen. I'm going to be working in the factory that my dad worked in. So being open, there is an amazing depth and feeling of vitality. We call it, in seminary, we call it a calling. That's probably as accurate as you can get. Mm-hmm. There's that sense of I am being called to something. It doesn't mean I can figure it out. It probably means I can't. Otherwise, I'd be calling myself. So I'm being called to something. And I felt that in each one of those pathways that I've taken. And they seem to cohere in a way that is reinforcing to me.
Well, and that I think just the awareness that being a church leader might look different, you know, to some people than when they're starting out in seminary. I think there's something encouraging about that, that as you're putting the emphasis on serving and seeing that there are different ways to be a church leader.
Oh, yeah.
So, and also at different phases in your life. So it's always great to have examples of.
And when I think about the word ministry, I remember when I was in seminary and went back into teaching English, I thought, you know, I think there is a kind of ministry that's available there. And I believe that that's true.
Well, have you brought a poem that you could share with us?
I have. I've been a Fulbright scholar twice. Once I was in Finland teaching up in Oulu, in northern Finland, at the University of Oulu for 7 months. And then another time I was in Greece, in Thessalonians. And when I was in Greece, Thessaloniki has a city wall, and there's some magnificent old churches there. And one day I walked up to one of them by the city wall, and you can see the city, you can see the rooftops of the city, and this poem, it comes from that experience. I was in a church, I was the only one there, it was very small, had a magnificent mosaic on the wall of Christ. And it was raining that day, and one of the things that happens with poets is sometimes, and pastors too, one and the same, sometimes we move from, we end up moving into the concrete in some way. And in this poem, I move to the image of some old men at the end who are full of light. So this is the poem. It's called All Our Lamps. Rain falls on tankers queued out to sea and on me standing in the doorway of this 14th century church, a mosaic of Christ in paradise behind me on the brick wall inside. I'll wait out the downpour, then head down streets pooled with runoff to my favorite cafe with its old men, those gifts of folded light.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you
very much. You've been listening to The Seminary Explores. I'm Katie Giebenhain with Seminary Ridge Review. My guest has been Bob Randolph, chairperson for the English and Foreign Languages Department and writer in residence at Waynesburg University. Visit Elixir Press at www.elixirpress.com. Thank you. You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.